Frank Sesich of Blue Ash, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC Accra.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tyler Burton of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC Daily News for Monday, May 29th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that Coxsackie Mayor Mark Evans posted on social media that there was an oil spill in the Hudson River on May 28th. The boat launch at Riverside Park in Coxsackie was closed because of the spill, with Evans calling it a, quote, major hazmat, unquote, situation. Evans said, quote, the spill extends well beyond Coxsackie and the source of it is not known at this time, unquote. Evans said that the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation spill response team is in charge of the incident. Evans said, quote, currently they have ordered the boat launch, beach, and docks closed until further notice, unquote. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that correction officers and other employees of the Department of Corrections and Community Supervision make up only 15% of the state workforce. But a report released this week by New York Inspector General Lucy Lang found that they make up 44% of the workers' compensation fraud cases since 2010 in the state. The report concluded that workers' compensation benefits for correction officers created incentives for fraud. Currently, correction officers get up to 6 months of medical leave at 100% pay for on-the-job injuries. According to the report, the benefit, quote, provides a monetary incentive to DOCS correction officers across the state to abuse the workers' compensation system, unquote. The report found that one day last December, eight correctional facilities had at least 10% of their entire security staff out on workers' compensation leave. New York State Correction Officers and Police Benevolent Association spokesperson James Miller said the union, quote, hasn't had the opportunity to fully review the report, so we're reserving comment at this time, unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. New York State of Politics reports that 13,000 petition signatures were delivered to the New York Capitol this week urging passage of a packaging reduction bill. The Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act is sponsored by the chairs of the Environmental Conservation Committees in both houses, State Assembly Member Deborah Glick and Senator Pete Harcum. The bills, Assembly 5322 and Senate 4246, would require companies to reduce packaging by 50% over the next 12 years. Former Environmental Protection Agency Administrator and current President of Beyond Plastics, Judith Enck, is backing the measure, saying it is incremental change that companies can handle, with a 10% reduction in packaging in year 3, a 20% reduction in year 5, and the 50% reduction after 12 years. Enck said, quote, if there are problems, you can course correct, unquote. And the law only applies to companies with more than $1 million in sales. read more about this story at New York State of Politics, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, May 29th. We are 40.8% of the way through the year with 23 days left until summer. Local early morning temperatures range from 47 degrees out in Cobleskill to 56 degrees in Tannersville. Regional average soil temperature is 57 degrees. Pollen levels are going to be high, so don't forget the diphenhydramine or your sunglasses. It is going to be sunny and warm, verging on hot today with 85 degrees happening at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 47 degrees. Then tomorrow will be breezy and warm with a high of 76. Overnight low of 47 again takes us into another dry and warm day on Wednesday. We get a high of 82. Thursday, the same pattern holds. Temps may finally break 90 degrees. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 5:37 a.m., high at 10:58 a.m., low again at 6:02 p.m., and high once again at 11:55 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 66 degrees and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:07 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:20 a.m. Looking way up, we see that for anyone heading down to the city, Manhattan Henge will occur today at 8:13 p.m. X-class flare chances are hovering around 10% today. Plasma winds will be average at 407 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 MHz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3.3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 119, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Real is in my eyes. Look.
Shut up. Shut up.
Next, we're going to hear from the Master Gardeners at the Cornell Cooperative Extension. They have a podcast called Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. And each week on WGXC, we'll hear different segments from the show focused on local gardening and gardening for the time of year it is.
Welcome back to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We're your hosts, Jean Thomas.
And Teresa Golden.
Today we'll be talking with Linda Levitt about container gardening. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you, Jean and Teresa.
Now, Linda, you're our container expert among the Master Gardeners. Could you explain how you acquired that title?
Well, it's interesting because our yard is full of animals, deer, rabbits, woodchucks, and I decided that I needed to do something to combat that because I couldn't have any flowers in the garden because they would eat everything. So I started using containers up against the house. Believe it or not, last year they started coming up on the deck and eating those too. So I guess I didn't win in that. But also the other thing too is I like to change every year. I like to change color schemes. I like to introduce new plants, experiment. And with containers, you can do that. You can don't plant it in the garden. You're able to change it from year to year. So that's really how I got started on it.
So let's start with the basics. I suspect that a container garden is a bit more complicated than simply tossing some dirt into a pot and stuffing in a few plants that look pretty together. So let's start with, how do you select the perfect container?
Well, what you have to do is you have to start with, what is your spacing? Is it up against the house? Is it out in the garden? And where is it? And then what happens is, what is my light? If it's in the driveway, obviously you don't want a metal container because it's going to absorb the heat and you're going to need to water like all the time. So what you need to do is you have to figure out that, first of all, the container has to hold the soil securely. So whatever you're going to use, make sure that the soil is able to stay in the container securely. And it must be watertight, but you have to have proper drainage. If you have wood containers especially, make sure it can resist rot and corrosion. So you have to be careful with that. In fact, a wood container, you might want to line with a plastic liner so that way, but still put drainage holes in it or drainage however you want to use it. You want to look at your space requirements, as I mentioned. You don't want a container that's too large in a very small space. And what would the temperature changes be? This is what I was talking about. Are you leaving it out for the winter? Are you putting it in the driveway? Now, one of the things that works very well, if you don't want to move the containers, you're going to want to have a composite or some kind of plastic container that can withstand the winter weather. If you put in a terracotta or a glazed pot of any sort, what's going to happen is if you leave it out in the wintertime, it's going to crack with the frost back and forth. So you have to be really careful. The other thing too is the weight. You obviously don't want a cement container if you're going to try and move it. And that's really, really important. So you have to be careful with that. But if it's too light, is it going to get blown over with the wind? So that is something to consider too. If it's too dark, as I mentioned, you know, and it's in your driveway, it's going to be a problem for watering and things like that. So you have to be careful with the color and, of course, the material. And so those are really how you choose it. Glazed pottery will crack in the winter, as I mentioned, and so you have to be real careful when you do that. Terracotta is probably my least favorite, only because you have to water it all the time and it will absorb the water away from the plant. So you have to be careful with that. So basically, that's how you would select your container.
Okay, so now you've selected your container. How do you get it ready for actually planting?
So what happens is, if it's a brand new container, it's pretty clean. But if you do want to clean it and make sure it's absolutely disease or insect free, you will clean the container with 5 parts of water and 1 part of bleach. You must get the container ready by putting in, if it's a composite, like a plastic container, you might want to drill holes in the bottom for drainage. And if you're unable to do that, what I've done in the past is I've used either stone in the bottom or I've used a cracked terracotta pot. And for those, you know, you can take a terracotta pot, break it in two, and just put it and use it at the bottom for drainage. The other thing I've done is if the pots are really, really large, I've taken a really inexpensive plastic pot, turned it upside down to take up space, but make sure that I have holes in the turned over pot to make sure that you get your drainage. But that will take up space, because people ask me a lot, how do you take up space in a large container? And that's one of the ways I do that.
I know that one. They call it dummying up. I think there's a reason I know that one.
The mistake I made one year is I put logs in the bottom, and of course, I guess the good thing was it rotted and it was natural mulch. However, it rotted, so everything started to sink. So that really wasn't good. What you're going to do is you're going to cover the drainage, whether it's just holes or the stone or whatever you're using. You're going to want to cover it with a piece of landscape cloth, a screen, or some burlap to keep the soil from going out the bottom and losing your soil during the season. If you're unable to empty the pot from the previous year, and I use my pots over and over year to year, I at least take out one third of the soil and I put brand new soil in, because you want the nutrients from the new soil to, you know, to nourish the plants. So what I do is I just take out that soil and I use it in the compost bin, or I use it in a new container. I'll put that at the bottom and then put new soil on top. So that's how you're going to get your containers ready for planting.
As gardeners, we all know the importance of soil. So how do you select the right kind of soil for your container?
Well, the best thing to do is you're not going to want to use garden soil. You're not going to go into your vegetable garden and dig out some soil, because it's going to compact really easily. And the other thing, too, is does it have enough nutrients? The one thing about us planting our containers probably, you know, now coming up in the spring and lasting through the summer, is that we really want nutrients in there. And if you have compacted soil that comes from the garden, it's probably not going to have the nutrients. So the best thing you want to do is probably go to your garden center and get some really nice sterile potting soil. And there's so many out there to choose from. And so you can just make sure that you want to do that. That's got a mixture of not only soil, but different perlite and different things that's going to keep your moisture and also your nutrients. The soil is going to be sterile also in the bag, and that's really very important. You don't want to introduce any kind of insects or bugs or any kind of plant disease. So that you want to start with sterile soil. And it also offers really good air and drainage. So your best bet is to just go to the market and get yourself some bagged soil.
Okay, so I've got my bagged soil and my container, and everything's lined like it's supposed to be. Now what?
So before you plant, this is the steps that I usually take. First of all, the plants that you're going to put into the container, you're going to want to water them thoroughly before you put them in the pot. You're going to fill the container about 80% with the soil. And the potting mix that you're going to use that we just talked about should be moist but not wet. You don't want it to be super dry. So if your bag of soil is very dry, you're going to want to pour some water in, mix it around, and make sure that it has a dampness to it, but not like mud. You certainly don't want to use it if it's muddy. You're going to remove the plants from the pots. Now be careful with this, because you're going to want to push them out of the pot rather than pulling. Do not pull the plants out. They're going to break the root systems and things like that. However, when you do take them out of the pot, you're going to want to loosen the roots with your fingers, a fork, or a slice you're going to slice it with a sharp knife or a sterile gardening tool. So you're going to want to stimulate the roots and make sure that they're ready to go. So just don't take it out of the pot. Kind of mix them around. And the best tool in your bag is your hands.
Amen.
So let's back up a bit. How do you pick your plants?
Well, the first thing you have to do is you're going to figure out, where am I putting this pot? You're going to have to make sure that you are going to have sunny. If it's a sunny location, you're going to want sunny plants. If you have a shade location, you're going to definitely want to make sure that all plants tolerate shade. When you go to the garden center, you're going to find that they have a little tag that says, you know, this needs sun, it needs water, so it's going to tell you all the different characteristics of that particular plant's needs. So be careful with that. So you go to the garden center, you pick your plants based on a couple of different things. One is height. You're going to want to put a plant that has some height to it. You're going to want a plant that's going to fill in the middle, and you're going to want a plant that's going to spill over the sides. We call that spiller, filler, and thriller. So your thriller is going to be your focal point. It's going to be a tall plant. It's going to be a bold plant. It's going to be something that's going to really catch your eye. The thing about the filler is you're going to want to have a gradual descent from the top plant to the bottom plant, as opposed to, I've done this before, I've had a really tall plant and a really short plant, and there's nothing in between, and it doesn't look as well. So you're going to want to have a gradual descent down from the top to the bottom. So what I've done in the past is I've either matched color, or I've either matched leaf texture. And what I find is the best colors together in a pot are burgundy, lime green, and orange. They look absolutely terrific together. And a lot of times I will match the color of the leaf with the color of the flower.
That was an excerpt of an interview from the Nature Calls Conversations from the Hudson Valley podcast from the master gardeners of the Cornell Cooperative Extension for Columbia and Greene Counties. You can hear the full episode at the Cornell Cooperative Extension webpage or in the WGXC archives at wgxc.org or at ccecolumbiagreene.org.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Freedom is not free. The cost is immense. It's exorbitant, and it's not financial. It's human.
Gold Star Father Wendell Pelham tells ABC News he returns to the annual Fort Bragg Memorial Day commemoration to reunite with other families that have lost sons and daughters. Since 9/11, more than 16,000 service members have died outside of combat, twice as many killed in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says he and President Joe Biden have reached an agreement in principle to raise the debt ceiling and avoid a historic default.
It has historic reductions in spending, consequential reforms that will lift people out of poverty into the workforce.
McCarthy says he expects the House to vote on it Wednesday, and he tells Fox News a pause on student loan payments will end 60 days after that's signed. Massachusetts progressive Ayanna Pressley says student debt relief is widely popular and desperately needed.
I do not call this student debt forgiveness because borrowers have done nothing wrong. They don't need to be forgiven anything, but they are deserving of and they do need relief.
The Supreme Court is considering two Republican-backed challenges to a Biden student debt relief plan. The conservative leading court may rule before summer break. Mayors across the U.S. are revealing summer public safety strategies. Officials in Cleveland, Newark, and Philadelphia say they'll make police more of a visible presence, and Baltimore will enforce a teen curfew. First-term Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson says community groups will play a larger role, and teams of trained peacekeepers will work to de-escalate conflicts.
My administration's top priority is making sure that there is a comprehensive whole-of-government strategy across our city that is keeping everyone safe.
Rates of crime and gun violence typically spike in the summer. Turkey's president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, has won re-election for another five-year term after two decades of consolidating power. Erdogan's nationalist appeal defeated his most serious democratic challenge in years, in spite of criticism for mismanaging 85% inflation and a devastating earthquake. In the U.S. Senate, Democrats have reintroduced a bill to create an Indian boarding school truth and healing commission. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland says it would document the history of government policies intended to wipe out Native American languages and culture.
As Indigenous people, we have lived with the intergenerational trauma of federal Indian boarding school policies for many years.
Haaland says the full effects have never been appropriately addressed. Montana has become the first state to specifically ban people dressed in drag from reading to children at public schools and libraries. Similar legislation has been introduced in Florida and Tennessee. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. On Memorial Day, an abridged portion of a speech at the U.S. Capitol by legendary campaign finance reformer Doris Granny D. Haddock, the 90-year-old grandmother who walked across the U.S. to bring attention to campaign finance corruption. This morning, we began our walk among the graves of Arlington so that those spirits, some of whom may be old friends, might join us today, and that we might ask of them now, did you, brave spirits, give your lives for a government where we might stand together as free and equal citizens, or did you give your lives so that laws might be sold to the highest bidder? What might we call the selling of our government from under us? What might we call a change of government from a government of, by, and for the people to a government by and for the wealthy elite? I will not call such a change of government a treason, but those more courageous shadows among us, whose blood runs through our flag and our history, and whose accomplishments are more solid beneath us than these stone steps, why they might use such a word in angry whispers that trace through the polluted quarters of this once great capital. We speak for these spirits and for ourselves. No, you may not have our democratic republic to sell. What our family members died for, we do not forget. They died for our freedom and equality, not for a government of the rich alone. We have a link to the full speech at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beale.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and Philip Grant up in Rensselaer County and I are bringing you the WGXC Congressional Report, full of stories about what the candidates and representatives from the New York 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional districts have been up to this past week. Go to WGXC.org in the WGXC newsroom for complete coverage of your congressional representative.
Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that Representative Pat Ryan keeps insisting that Republicans are proposing to slash veteran services. Currently, Congress must approve a new debt ceiling to cover past spending, and instead of just approving a new limit as in the past, Republicans in the House of Representatives say they will only approve a new limit if there are massive spending cuts in the next budget. Ryan said, and I quote, "Far-right extreme Republicans in Washington have offered two bad options. Either we default on the full faith and credit of the United States, which is unprecedented in our nation's history, or we agree to their cruel cuts to veteran services. These are the men and women who risk their lives for our country. American heroes I served with in Iraq who were told this country would always have their back. My response is simple. Hell no." End quote. Republican Representative Mark Molinaro claims there will be no cuts to veteran services, saying, and I quote, "Cuts to veteran services and benefits are off the table. The Limit Save Grow Act sets a top-line number for the entire federal budget. It does not include cuts to the VA," end quote. Molinaro did not say what spending cuts he is in favor of or what cuts Republican negotiators are demanding of President Joe Biden's team. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Joshua Solomon reports in the Times Union about what Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado has been up to. It has been about a year since Delgado quit on the 19th congressional district, leading to a special election that Democrats won and a general election that Republicans won. Delgado was seen widely with Governor Kathy Hochul during her reelection campaign last fall, but since then Delgado has not been very visible. Now Solomon writes, and I quote, "He has been relatively absent during the governor's biggest political fights since the election, the failed nomination of Justice Hector de la Salle as chief judge, an unprecedented and now failed proposal to increase housing, and recent changes to the state's bail laws intended to increase public safety," end quote. Delgado declined to be interviewed for the story, instead sending a statement that said, in part, that he has, and I quote, "worked in partnership with Governor Hochul to build a safer, fairer, and more affordable state," end quote. Instead, Solomon caught up with Delgado speaking in Herkimer, and I quote, "reading lines that can be traced back to state websites and administration news releases," end quote. Delgado has almost become Hochul, who, as number two to Andrew Cuomo, did little but tour the state and meet many local officials. Delgado has been meeting folks such as Assemblyperson Chris Teague, a Schoharie conservative, who at the Old Tater Barn in Schoharie County saw the lieutenant governor at an annual Chamber of Commerce awards dinner. Delgado said, and I quote, "the community embraced me, and whether you were a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent, there was at least an attempt to be civil, thoughtful," end quote. Delgado then turned to Teague and said, and I quote, "we're not going to agree on every single issue, right, Chris?" end quote.
Teague said he wishes Delgado had a louder voice in the Hochul administration, saying, and I quote, maybe things would be a little different in Albany if he was able to play a bigger role, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Kevin Frey reports for New York State of Politics that two Hudson Valley congressional representatives are sniping at each other as Democrats want to increase the country's debt limit, while Republicans will only agree to that if Democrats agree to spending cuts. Republican Mark Molinaro, who represents the 19th Congressional District, said, and I quote, we can neither default nor can we sustain the rate of spending, end quote. Democrat Pat Ryan is complaining about the spending cuts the Republicans are demanding, even though increasing the country's debt limit was previously routine and nonpartisan. Ryan said, and I quote, the money has to come from somewhere when you make cuts across the board, end quote. And that means, Ryan said, that veterans will see cuts. Molinaro said, and I quote, it's an outright lie that, quite frankly, doesn't astonish me. We have already moved forward with robust veteran funding, end quote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information. From the 2023 album Dreams in Splattered Lines, that is Wolf Eyes there with Radio Box on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
New York Renews, Citizen Action, PAUSE, and many other climate groups and elected officials held a press conference at the state capitol on Thursday, May 25th, to call upon state lawmakers to pass key climate, jobs, and justice bills, including the 100% Renewable Capital Bill, New York Heat, and the Climate Superfund Act. Similar events were held throughout the state. The groups want legislation to protect Black, brown, and working people from pollution hotspots in the state's future CAP and INVEST program. The group had a massive blown-up pig to highlight the corruption and greed of the fossil fuel industry. One key climate bill that almost passed last year was the New York Heat Act, which would cap utility bills for low- and moderate-income New Yorkers at 6% of their income and would require the state public service commissions and others to halt this promotion of natural gas and fossil fuels, including ending the massive subsidies for new gas hookups. Unfortunately, recent reports from Politico indicate that the state assembly will fail to allow the HEAT Act to even come up for a vote, arguing that the two climate measures included in the recent budget is enough for them for the year. We hear from NYPERG Executive Director Blair Horner, State Assembly Member Phil Steck, Albany County Legislator William Reinhart, and myself, Mark Dunley, as coordinator of PAUSE, People of Albany United for Safe Energy. We also hear from Alicia Bacon of Mothers Out Front, who is MC for the event.
Standing behind me is a giant pig, a giant pink pig. And that pig is here to symbolize the greed of the big oil companies who instead, in the 1970s, instead of alerting the public to the danger that they knew about, they bamboozled the public, launched public relations campaigns to undermine the science that was developing. And as a result, we are now facing a climate catastrophe. Here we are at the end of the legislative session, coming down the home stretch. One of the key proposals, amongst the package of key proposals to deal with climate, is one that will tag the oil companies for $3 billion a year for the next 25 years to pick up the costs of climate damages in New York, costs that otherwise we have to pay. That ain't right. And the oil companies have the money. They're responsible, not New Yorkers. So we believe that this important legislation, the Climate Change Superfund Act, must be part of any final climate package for this session. There's way too much damage that's being done to New York. There's too much of a threat in terms of climate change. The legislature has to act in the remaining 10 days of the session.
So next we are going to hear from Assemblymember Phil Steck.
I called for something, the Green New Deal, before anyone ever heard of AOC. And the idea behind a Green New Deal is that we can create more jobs through building up green infrastructure at the same time that save the planet, which, of course, Mert Simpson has spoken so eloquently about. And there's proof that this can be done. For example, the New York Independent System Operator announced that solar energy had produced 20% of all the energy needed in New York State and reached its highest point yet. Further, we haven't seen any new jobs from General Electric in the Capital Region for 30 years at least. And yet GE has announced that they will be building wind turbines to produce clean energy here in the Capital Region, creating jobs. I support all the bills that we're here to talk about today, but the very best bill on environmental issues happens to be my bill. And that bill is the bill to reinstate the stock transfer tax, which New York had from 1905 to 1981. And in our bill, as it exists now, would create $2 billion a year in funding for green infrastructure. We have a lot of great bills, but unfortunately, the state is facing a revenue crisis. One of the things about all green initiatives is they need to be funded. And the stock transfer tax would generate $14 billion a year. And we could use half of that for green infrastructure. And we could use the other half to help our citizens move to using green energy and offset the cost of buying electric vehicles, as well as building all the services we need for a green economy.
So much. Next, we are going to hear from a climate leader who represents Albany's 33rd Legislative District in the Albany County Legislature, William Reinhart.
I also represent solar energy through Solarize Albany, and I've been working for years to try to improve renewable energy development in the region. What I want to talk about today is this pig has so much money from all of the fossil fuel costs that we all pay that they have money to waste on misinformation campaigns.
Yeah.
Misinformation campaigns that are trying to tell you that the police, I don't know if that's Albany City, state troopers, whatever, they're coming to get your gas stove. It's misinformation. What they actually are trying to do, it's not taking away your freedom to burn gas and make your house dirty air. What they're doing is they're trying to take away your freedom to clean air and clean water, which is now guaranteed under our state constitution. We passed a referendum a few years back, and that's a guarantee now. So when you hear that misinformation, just remember what they really want to do is to continue to pollute our air and our water and feed the pig. Okay? So what I want to say as a county legislator is I'm involved with others in the legislature, including Mert Simpson and others, and we are moving the county of Albany towards the green economy that you've heard other people talk about. We've got various initiatives that we've undertaken. But as another speaker said, these state measures that are being discussed today are critical for the state to move forward. And the thing you all need to understand, I think most people behind me do, every level of government has to play a role in this, whether it's federal, state, county, city, town. We all have to get on board and do more. We have a climate emergency.
Yeah.
It's not climate change, like we can let our kids deal with it or we can let our grandkids deal with it. It's an emergency. Unfortunately, the private sector has not organized itself quick enough to solve this problem. That's why some of the speakers are talking about we need to invest in public infrastructure with the revenue that we'd raise. That's how we're going to get out of this problem. That infrastructure can be EV charging stations. It can be improvements in all kinds of public utility systems. There's a lot that has to be done, and it has to be done fast because it's an emergency. Okay? It's not just your father's climate change that we knew about in the 1970s, but we didn't do anything about. Okay? It's an emergency.
Next, we are going to hear from a local activist, the convener of PAWS, People of Albany United for Safe Energy. Please welcome Mark Dunley.
Thank you. I always enjoy being with the corporate pig. Unfortunately, that's too prevalent at the state capitol. Just briefly, I want to state our support for the 100% Renewable Capital Act. And besides trying to get the state capitol, the Empire State Plaza, and other buildings to go to 100% renewable energy, we really need to shut down the Sheridan Avenue power plant. That has been polluting a low-income community of color for more of a century. It has burned oil. It has burned coal. It has burned garbage. It has burned gas. We should not inflict pollution on low-income people of color to, keep the state capital and the state workers warm when there are better alternatives. With my friend the pig, we got to make those corporate polluters pay, and one way to do that is the Climate Superfund Act. We've been told the last 3.5 years that the reason the legislature did so little on climate, it was because they were waiting for the climate scoping plan to be done. Well, it's done. It's time to act. And that is the message United Nations continues to give. They say now that within the next 5 years, we're going to pass the 1.5-degree tipping point. There is no more time left. And it's time for the state lawmakers to stop acting like ostriches, pretending that passing one or two bills, certainly they were good bills, is enough to avoid climate collapse. So we need action. We need it now.
This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that an audit of the New York State Thruway Authority, announced May 26 by Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, found the state is owed $276.3 million in fees and tolls. Almost half of that money is owed by out-of-state drivers. The audit suggested several ways the state could work to collect the money. Thruway Executive Frank Hoare said the authority, and I quote, will continue to utilize all available tools at our disposal to fairly and effectively collect tolls and violation fees from our customers, end quote. Thruway officials are raising tolls by about 5% on the first day of 2024 and an additional 5% on January 2027. Those increases would be even larger for drivers who do not have EasyPass. Politically, collecting tolls from out-of-state drivers will be more popular than increasing tolls for everyone. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Brian Hubert reports in the Daily Freeman that WAMC President and CEO and constant on-air presence Alan Shartok said he is retiring from radio and his newspaper columns. The 81-year-old said it was, and I quote, time for a new group of leaders to take the helm, end quote. Stacy Roseberry, WAMC's Director of Operations and Engineering, was named interim CEO by the Executive Committee of the nonprofit's Board of Trustees. Shortalk took over WAMC in 1981 when Albany Medical Center handed over the FM signal. Then Shortalk grew WAMC from a single station into a 29-station network over seven northeastern states. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Porcupine Soup rounds up a list of all the Memorial Day parades and events in Greene County this weekend. On May 26, Wyndham VFW Post 1545 held Memorial Day services on the front lawn of the Wyndham Ashland Jewett School. On May 28th, American Legion Bunt Brewer Post 165 in Tannersville holds its annual Memorial Day Parade, meeting at noon at Botini Fuel on Route 23A and ending at Tannersville Village Hall. Most of the events are on Memorial Day, May 29th, with events in Athens, Cairo, Catskill, Coxsackie, Greensville, Lexington, Prattsville, and Durham. And you can read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, and COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice holiday weekend.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC weather forecast for Monday, May 29th. A backdoor cold front will bring a slightly cooler but still dry air mass to the region early this week before warmer air returns mid to late week, according to the National Weather Service in Albany. Monday should be sunny with a high of 77 and a north wind 6 to 8 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Mostly clear is the forecast for Monday night with a low around 48. Then Tuesday should also be sunny with a high of 74 and a low around 48. Wednesday, again, a sunny forecast is in store with a high of 79 and a low around 55. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.
If you would like to be on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, now's your chance. Want to fulfill a long-time or newly emerging desire to be on the radio? Want to become part of the community conversations on Wavefarms WGXC 90.7 FM radio for open ears? You have an idea for a short recurring segment? Tune into a Zoom meeting May 30th at 6 p.m. online. Contact content at WGXC.org to register and with any questions, but we would love as many voices as possible to be on the radio at WGXC, and this is your chance.
I have a request to hear music on your radio station. The artist is Roshan Roland Kirk. The name of the song is Blackness, B-L-A-C-K-N-U-S-S. Thank you.
Now we gathered here on the universe at this time, this particular time, to listen to the 36 black notes of the piano. There's 36 black notes and 52 white notes. We don't mean to eliminate nothing, but we're going to just hear the black notes at this time, if you don't mind. Blackness, B-L-A-C-K-N-U-S-S. Thank you.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXE will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.